From WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke. Today on the program, the larger goal behind UW-Milwaukee's Sustainability Summit happening this week. Later, an essayist at this year's Listen to Your Mother storytelling event says it's a natural outgrowth of what she does all the time.
Every day of mine was filled with stories. Hilarious moments, challenging moments, really difficult moments. And the thought of standing on stage and sharing one of those moments with a group of people who would listen and someone who might get it was a really powerful idea for me.
And Wisconsin musician Sean Carey talks about how his background in classical percussion informs his songwriting.
I think that the percussion part of me comes out more in my songs than maybe the drummer part of me.
Lake Effect comes your way next after news from NPR and Milwaukee Public Radio. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Even the day after Earth Day, sustainability is still in the air. Businesses and schools around the country are carving away at energy consumption and looking at ways to reduce waste. The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee is one such place. Its Office of Sustainability came to life in 2008, and more recently, the school earned a silver rating in a nationwide sustainability tracking, assessment, and rating system. This week, UWM is holding a symposium to build on its momentum. WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bent stopped by the office of Chief Sustainability Officer Kate Nelson. Nelson says the event has a serious thrust, but it also has its fun side in an effort to engage students. Parts of the week range from workshops covering climate change and public health to a concert and recycled fashion show.
The Recycled Fashion Show was it's been a feature for years in our Earth Week events, really just a way to engage the students with something fun, happening on the main campus in the center of everything. And there's a lot of fun events for the students besides the more intense planning efforts that we're doing with the symposium. And things do conclude for the students with a bike-powered concert on Thursday night, which is really, really fun. And I can say those concerts are 100% powered by those bikes. And if you pedal, you'll know why.
So now the symposium is a brand new effort. How long have you been at it to pull these pieces together?
We have been at it about 2 years.
To put this together?
Yes, because it really originated from the sustainability report that we did based on STARS, Sustainability Tracking, Assessment, and Rating System. And the whole time we were putting that report together, we just kept saying, this is the way we build the next step. This is the way we build the campus engagement. And we knew that we had to put together a good program to bring everyone to the table around it.
So describe some of the process that it took. That's okay, they're actually cleaning here, so we don't want to stop that. Talk about the players in this, Kate, and how did you weave it all together?
Well, it really, we based the symposium around the main components of the report. So anyone who is involved, who has been involved with our energy projects, our food and gardening projects, the recycling and the waste, we're launching a new green cleaning program. But also it really spoke to where the program had to go. And it helped really push us outside our comfort zone and to bring diversity and inclusion into the sustainability discussion and to really try to navigate the waters of what we teach and research here and how all those components are also about sustainability and then interweaving them with student life and the operations of the campus. So living laboratories really being the crux of how we bring together not only the environment, economics, and the social aspects of sustainability, but then all these other components on campus. So I remember when we sent the report out in August, it went out to 75 people who helped. So now this is really our gift, I think, in a way to the campus to say, here's some local food and local drink. Come be a part of the planning because we've, as much as we've done, I think there's so many places to go And I want to hear from the campus about what those priorities should be.
By the time listeners hear this, you'll be midway. On Earth Day itself, you have a keynote speaker. You have a state of, you're it.
I'm it.
Have you prepared?
I've been preparing and preparing. I really give a lot of credit to the folks who work in my office to help me prepare for it. I'm giving a State of Sustainability address. It's just back to why I let a report sit on a shelf.
So you give your talk, you talk about where we are, and let's not let this report sit on the shelf. What can we do together? And so by Wednesday, now when people hear this, you've got 2 full days of workshops.
Yeah, we've got 9 workshops throughout Wednesday and Thursday. And then we conclude in the evening on, we sort of conclude in the evening on Thursday with
More cherry pie,
with local mustard. There's actually going to be a Ray Horse local drink featured. It's a moment to reflect on where we are at with our faculty development and research in sustainability, specifically around the themes that have been brought out in our strategic planning process, which are climate change, water, food, and health. And then even exploring where sustainability is at in the arts. There's a really amazing graphic design course that teaches design through ecology and business practices. And then the real conclusion is Friday. I'm kind of calling it a student advising / therapy session, which I know sounds a little bit strange. But it's a moment to bring students together in a more relaxed setting to sit around and really go over the courses that are taught here in all the schools and colleges have something to do with sustainability. And that's what we discovered in the report. To share that information, to broaden a student's opportunities on campus, and then we're also working with the Career Development Center to say, well, what do you want to be? What is a green job to you? And so let's start having this discussion about where UWM can take you.
So do you have a sense already who's going to be with you for the duration, or how does this happen? People come and go, or they register, or?
Yeah, people come and go. They can come to any session that they want to. Registration was online. We were trying to at least get an idea of who was coming. And really, we just keep encouraging students to come by. If they haven't registered, or if anyone on campus hasn't registered, they can come in. We need all voices at the table. Not just the ones who have been a part of this for a long time, but we need new voices at the table.
So what is your sense of those new voices? Do you feel like they're coming in?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're hearing a lot more from health and sciences. We're hearing a lot more from public health. The students come from anywhere. I talk to students in journalism and psychology and the arts and English and philosophy. I want those voices at the table to be talking about what our buildings should look like and how they should be built. I want art students talking to me about how to design new bike racks. I want to be there as this infusion of the folks who run the residence halls with the students who come and live in those spaces. I want to hear a dialogue across the campus happening around sustainability.
The student body is cyclical. I mean, students come and then eventually they go and a new group comes. Does that make it more alive because really every year there's some kind of shift and change?
It's challenging. I think I've put a lot of time and effort into our staff on campus and building their resources up for sustainability, kind of as an extension of our office, because they are here through and through, and that is really important to keep building a program. What's great about that is that the students come in every year and infuse it with new energy and ideas. So the two together are a really great match. And then you add on the elements of research and education to strengthen both of those, you really have something. So you've got to work on the front of the folks who are here through and through, and then utilize that extra energy that comes in, the new ideas, and to give them a place to get an idea started. And then allow the rest of campus who maintains the campus or is building the campus, planning the campus, to really be able to take those ideas and move them forward over the years.
So what comes of all of this discussion and the ideas and the, you know, all of this that you'll be hearing and being a part of this week?
I think the number one point is that sustainability is not just about zero. Zero waste, zero discharge, zero emissions. What I want to see happening more is where campus stands and develops, the growth of campus built around sustainability. The sustainability is a part of the retention of our students, and it offers new opportunities to attract students and to see the growth of campus built around sustainability. The other thing, we're going to start the STARS report all over again in a new version. And so we have new ideas to move that forward. And ultimately, we'll be examining how do we reprioritize based around what the campus wants, and how do we use their efforts to keep moving things forward. So infusing the energy to act, engage, inspire, and act is the motto of our symposium. And the big thing we'd ultimately like to see is perhaps campus engaging in a climate action plan to really keep intentionalizing how we're going to reduce our emissions on campus.
Kate Nelson is Chief Sustainability Officer at UW-Milwaukee. The school's inaugural Sustainability Symposium is underway on campus this week. We are also talking about sustainability at Milwaukee Public Radio throughout the week. It is our spring membership drive, the Spring Into Action Drive. We have a goal of $130,000 to help sustain this show and this station on into the future. Lake Effect Bonnie North joins us now. And sustainability is really a key part of the equation.
It certainly is, Mitch, because one of the ways you can help make sure that Milwaukee Public Radio is sustained is by becoming a sustaining member. And you can do that for as little as $5 a month. You could do it for as much as you wanted per month. The important thing is that you call 414-227-3210, or you go to wuwm.com/give and become a member. Or perhaps you're already a member, but you haven't renewed yet. This is a perfect time to do that. And when you do become a sustaining member at that $5 a month or more level, we will send you this wonderful steel travel mug. It's a stainless steel tumbler with a push-on lid, plastic liner, foam insulation, and the all-important WUWM logo on there so that you can proudly show that you are a sustaining member.
Well, and just as importantly, during this Earth Week, it is an environmentally friendly way to have your beverage of choice every morning. So you're not going through the drive-thru and getting a new paper cup or a plastic cup every day. You can fill this up at home, bring it to the restaurant of your choice, and show off your support for WUWM. Become a sustaining member. Help us rely on your support throughout the course of the year. Become a sustaining member at the $60 or $5 a month level and take advantage of that travel mug.
We also want to make sure that you understand that you are included in a drawing when you call 414-227-3210, or you click on wuwm.com/give, and that includes a dinner for two in Chicago at the Michelin-starred Moto restaurant. It includes an indoor farm tour and a lab cooking class. So that'll be fun. Somebody will win that, but you've got to call and be in it to win it, as they say. 414-227-3210, wuwm.com/give. Be that sustaining member today.
We'll take a break now, and in just a moment, where Germany falls in the future direction of our relations with Russia. And a storytelling event planned for Sunday focuses on the experience of motherhood. This is Lake Effect from listener-supported WUWM. Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. Vice President Joe Biden traveled to Ukraine this week to show support for the interim leadership there amid the continuing political and military crisis. Lake Effect commentator Art Sear says it's important to look to history to understand a way through the crisis.
To jaw-jaw is better than to war-war, said Winston Churchill in 1954, supporting the principle of nations negotiating. Those wise words from a great leader who understood war should be kept in mind regarding the Geneva Accord on the crisis in Ukraine. Churchill made the comment during the early years of the Cold War, after effective cooperation between the Western Allies and the Soviet Union to defeat Nazi Germany had collapsed. Escalating discord over aspects of occupation of the defeated nation evolved into the Cold War. Moscow's efforts to force Britain, France, and the United States out of Berlin provided the immediate spark for this four decades of conflict. The Korean War made the Cold War global. The Cuban Missile Crisis underscored the always proximate danger of nuclear Armageddon. The Cold War can be traced through conflict, crisis, and war, but was essentially rooted in different conceptions of society and relations between nations. Soviet leaders, quote, are not like us, unquote, wrote American diplomat George Kennan in his book Realities of American Foreign Policy, published in the same year Churchill made his declaration in favor of negotiation over war. Kennan, expert on Germany and Russia, was among the most perceptive of the Cold War U.S. policy analysts and always ardent student. The containment policy he defined guided United States policies toward the Soviet Union and other communist powers from the administration of Harry Truman through George H.W. Bush. He focused on traditional, prudent, realist diplomacy, including unavoidability of conflicting national interests. He emphasized Soviet and U.S. leaders very markedly in experiences and outlook. Particularly brutal total war informed Moscow's worldview. Their fundamentally unproductive system, if restrained, would eventually collapse, and our relations with friendly nations were relatively more important. Kennan headed the policy planning staff of the State Department in the Truman administration when containment became formally established as the foundation of the U.S. approach to the Soviet Union. He became a target of conservatives, even as President Dwight Eisenhower used him to confirm containment. President John F. Kennedy deserves credit for bringing Kennan back into public service as ambassador to Yugoslavia. Positioned at the crossroads of East-West Cold War conflict, representing our national interests in a major breakaway East European state, he acquitted himself commendably. In 1979, Princeton University Press published one of Kennan's most challenging books, The Decline of Bismarck's European Order. After unifying Germany, Otto von Bismarck provided effective diplomatic leadership to continental Europe through managing complex alliances. His departure from office and the mediocre leadership that followed set the stage for World War I. Today, the European Union provides a unifying economic structure, while Germany has reemerged as principal leading nation on the continent. Chancellor Angela Merkel has succeeded in securing greater financial discipline within the EU, especially on heavily indebted nations of Southern Europe. She also is adept at limiting strong domestic political pressures to abandon the leadership role, which includes underwriting the solvency of nations many Germans view as profligate. Nationalist sentiments are subdued but still potentially potent. The success of this balancing act, leading the diverse nations of the EU while reconciling often intense domestic political factions, is extremely impressive. The EU and also NATO provide frameworks for German, U.S., and other leaders to coordinate counterpressures to Russia in Ukraine and elsewhere. Within this structure, economic leverage remains key. Despite Putin's bluster and bullying, Russia today, as in history, remains economically dependent on others.
Art Sear is Clausen Distinguished Professor of Political Economy at Carthage College in Kenosha and a Lake Effect contributor. Nearly a dozen storytellers will gather in front of an audience at Alverno College's Weir Theater on Sunday to speak to the experience of motherhood. It's the second annual Listen to Your Mother Milwaukee event, the local presentation of a national effort with Wisconsin roots. Alexandra Rosas is co-organizer and co-producer of the event, and Lane Pierce is one of the essay contributors. They're with us in the studio this morning. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Remind people of the story of Listen to Your Mother. This is a concept that actually has Wisconsin roots.
Yes, it does. It began through Ann Immig. She's the national director and founder from Madison, Wisconsin. And about 5 years ago, she had attended a major social media conference, and she had noticed that there was no creative outlet for mothers, women who like to express themselves and talk about motherhood. She decided to start something in Madison, Wisconsin. She did. We call it The Fever. The Fever for Sharing spread. And the first year, there were five shows, and then 10 shows, then 12, 24. Now there's 32 cities, and every year more and more cities apply to have regular people tell extraordinary stories, which anybody's life is an extraordinary story. And what we do as co-producers, co-directors, is we make that a possibility for so many women who want to have a chance to share who they are.
Well, and talk about that idea of extraordinary stories. I mean, why do you think it's important to speak to motherhood in this particular way?
I think if we all step back and look at what we do and who we are, it's amazing. We are marvelous and we have fantastic things to share. And the whole process of finding an audience and finding the readers is something that really creates community because we get to see what life is like for another person.
This is actually really like a slice of life that you might not have access to without an essay like this.
Exactly. And you'll notice as time goes on, more and more people on their cell phones and on the computers. I mean, we become more isolated and this hunger for connection grows. And to sit and just listen to somebody talk, 90 minutes of just sharing stories is something that really changes how we see people.
Remind us what sort of parameters you set for the material.
You don't have to be a mother. You have to have been mothered in some way, even if it's mothering yourself, talking about how you yourself became a mother. And what we do is we look for a common theme in all our stories. And that's where the magic happens. We hold auditions. People come in. We look for this theme that originates like magic. And together we thread these stories together and they dovetail. The beginning of one works into the end of another. And we come up with between 10 to 14 speakers, original works. And it really is – it's a beautiful thread. It's a beautiful personal narrative arc.
And this is an organic process. You don't necessarily go out with a theme in mind. The theme presents itself to you?
It does, which is hard to explain and believe until people come and hear it for themselves at the shows.
But I imagine that must be one of the rewarding parts of organizing this is taking all of this material and seeing how one essay connects to the next.
It's exciting. I've been looking at these shows and watching these shows for 5 years now, and every single show is unique because you don't know who's going to present themselves from the community. And these threads do emerge, and they're beautiful.
Lane Pierce, you are reading an essay you contributed at this year's event. What drew you to this idea?
Well, I've always loved stories. I've loved telling stories and I've loved hearing stories. And I knew that if I were to join Listen to Your Mother, I would be part of a community that would celebrate motherhood. And as a mother myself, I have a 2-year-old, I started to realize that every day of mine was filled with stories, hilarious moments, challenging moments, really difficult moments. And the thought of standing on stage and sharing one of those moments with a group of people who would listen and someone who might get it and might understand was a really powerful idea for me because I thought, what better way to be part of a supportive community than to share our stories together?
You are a stay-at-home mom, and I wonder if that's a real issue for you, is finding people that will listen and people that get it.
Yes. But I'm also very lucky because I do know a lot of other young mothers. And interestingly, what happens is we get together, we sit around, and we share our stories together. We sit on the couch, we sit at the table, we have a cup of coffee, and that's what ends up happening organically anyway.
Is this kind of emblematic of the experience, at least for some of the people that bring and share their essays?
I think so. I really think so. I mean, if you ever go to a show or if you watch a show, it is like being in somebody's living room for that time. You're sharing stories, you're listening, and the gift of not being interrupted. These stories are 5 minutes long. The gift of having nobody pull on you or yank on you and of being able to just listen for 5 minutes is really something that is a gift for both sides, the audience and for the person reading.
The gift of not being interrupted as the mother of a 2-year-old must be a fairly powerful gift.
Oh, to be listened to is incredible. Yes, to have a moment of silence.
To say words with more syllables.
That's right, a whole conversation.
If I'm not mistaken, this actually will also represent your public storytelling debut in a format like this. Obviously, you get together and share stories.
But. Yes, this is the first time I'll be sharing one publicly like this, but it has really given me momentum on so many fronts. The words just keep coming and coming, and I'm finding myself wanting to compile more and more of these stories for myself too.
Was it the essay that drove your wanting to participate in this, or was it the event that drove your wanting to write the essay?
I think it was the event. I think it was the idea that I could be in a community of storytellers. And some are writers and some are not. And we could sit down together and experience these small moments of everyone's life and know that we were sharing in something really important together. So the word that comes to mind is community.
Well, with so much material potentially at your disposal, was it hard to figure out exactly how to take the experience of motherhood and find an adequate snapshot in 5 minutes?
Yes. I had to try several times. In fact, when I first started, I started writing my story like I was trying to encompass everything that had happened since my son had been born. And then I realized that it's thousands of these little moments that are coming together. And so I decided to choose just one. And that moment for me and my story is the moment I realized I was pregnant for the first time.
What was it about Lane's essay that made it fit so well with this year's event?
It was just something that encompassed the whole experience of motherhood. We have a beginning, we have a middle, and then we have an end. And when she walked in and she auditioned, that was like the period on the sentence. We're like, there it is right there. And it's hard to really put a description or a formula to it. But the thing is, we knew that that was going to be our piece and it was going to be our closing piece. And it's just such good fortune to find people like this in the community.
A lot of pressure being the closing piece.
No kidding. Yes.
You do come at this with a strong writing background, though. That is what you do.
Yes. I've always worked in communications. So in one way or another, a pen has been part of the jobs that I've held.
But when you work in communications, you don't necessarily write for the sake of emotion, or do you?
Well, it depends. In some of my past experiences, I've worked for organizations that I've really believed in. And so as I tell success stories of clients who have been served as organizations that make a big difference in Milwaukee, I do feel emotional and connected to that writing. But you're right. It's very different to open up a small moment of your personal life and your heart to people that you've never met before. And that's a very intimidating and exciting thing altogether.
And someday your two-year-old will be able to read this.
Yes, and he'll be able to see the video as well, which is so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
He'll
mm-hmm.
see what his mom looked like when she was young.
This is going on at the Ware Theater.
Yes.
At Alverno College. What makes that such an appealing venue for this?
We have a lot of people who have never written before. We have people who have written just for the show. It's 360 seats. It's intimate. It's non-intimidating. It's cozy. It makes everybody feel warm and welcome. It works so well for us. It's on a women's campus. It is exactly how we envision our show, which is being held and supported by a community. And it's in the heart of Milwaukee. It's perfect for us.
Do you feel like, has the show evolved in some ways since you did the first Listen to Your Mother, Milwaukee?
I think what's happened is the people involved have evolved. That powerful thing of empowerment, when you take a risk, you're safe about it. It just is a springboard. We tell everybody at the end of our show, your story isn't over. Your story has begun. And that's what I really see is the changes in the readers. We're all new at this. The producers and directors have never done this before. The readers have never done this before. It's such a learning experience, and that's really where I think the growth comes from.
You also contribute an essay to this year's event. As someone who has been involved in this for the 5 years that it has been around, do you see motherhood through a certain filter or certain lens?
We could go on forever about that. But yes, absolutely, because motherhood is a journey and it is something that you never can predict. As an example, last year when I read, I had a mother. This year I don't. My mother has passed away, and to feel that loss has changed the essay I'm contributing this year. I also have my oldest who now leaves for college. Motherhood is never static. And when you have somebody else, it may be a new experience for you, but when you hear somebody else up at the podium talking about it, you feel comforted and reassured. So it's going to be different next year for me when my son is gone from the house, I'm sure.
As a mother of 2 years, it must be a powerful thing to be a part of something with people who have been mothers for much longer periods of time.
And that's what I value so much about our show. We're talking about mothers and their everyday experiences, but we're also talking about all the lessons that we've learned from our community of mothers. And the reality is, in one way or another, we have all come from mothers. And so to celebrate that together in all of its complexity, I think, is such an exciting opportunity.
Well, I feel like we've been teasing people throughout the course of this interview, and so I was really hoping that you'd share a little bit of your essay with us, and if you wouldn't mind setting it up a bit, and then if we could hear a couple of paragraphs, that would be great.
I'd love to. So I wrote a short piece about the moment I discovered I was pregnant for the first time, and it's called Ready or Not. When we saw the blue plus sign, it was Mother's Day 2011. My husband had the flu, and I pulled him out of a feverish haze to say, I'm late. I'm still late. It's time to take the test. We both stepped into our bathroom to see the results. Our tiny bathroom, so small you can't close the door with two people inside, let alone three. There was the blue plus sign, a small, unassuming blue plus sign that carried so much weight. I started flapping my hands in an effort to rise above that tiny, crowded bathroom. The thing is, we wanted a baby. I wanted a baby. And we tried for a baby. Once. One time. Knowing that if it happened, great. But one time? That's like sticking your toe in the pool of fertility. I assumed we had months of romance. Many margaritas. I assumed we had time. Time to prepare. Time to read what to expect when you expect to be expecting. For God's sake, I hadn't taken one prenatal vitamin. What we had wasn't just a blue plus sign. We had a baby. A baby who was so ready to be ours, it just took once.
Lane Pierce reading from her essay that's part of this year's Listen to Your Mother, Milwaukee. Thank you so much, and thank you, Alexandra Rose.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Lane Pierce is a mom who lives in Whitefish Bay. She'll read her full essay at this Sunday afternoon's Listen to Your Mother Milwaukee event at the Ware Theater at Alverno College. Alexandra Rosas will also read an essay. She's co-organizer and co-producer of the event. And you can learn how to win tickets to the show at wuwm.com/contests. We hope you'll swing by WUWM.com. Regardless, you can go to WUWM.com/give or call us at 414-227-3210 to participate in this year's Spring Into Action Spring Membership Drive. Help us reach our goal of $130,000, at which point the drive will end. Help us reach our goal this hour of $600 and help sustain Lake Effect for another year.
Exactly. And, you know, if I were listening to my mother, she would be telling me to call 414-227-3210 or to click, although she doesn't do much with the computers, but she would still say to go to WUWM.com.
My mom would tell us to go to WUWM.com.
There you go. Mine would tell you to call and yours would tell you to go to the computer. Either way, the important thing is you become a member or a renewing member. And active member, we like to call them, of Milwaukee Public Radio. It's so important that that you understand that your contributions make all of this possible. Everything that you hear is made possible by the generous financial support that you give. And so whatever that amount is, whether it's $100, whether it's $1,000, whether it's somewhere in between, the important thing is that you make the contribution. 414-227-3210, wuwm.com/give. And we have to talk about this wonderful giveaway.
That's right. When you become a sustaining member, or when you become a member at the $60 level, or a sustaining member beginning at $5 a month, you can take advantage of the 17-ounce stainless steel tumbler. It's got a push-on lid, a plastic liner. It's insulated. It'll keep your drink warm or cold, depending on whether you want to keep it warm or cold. And it has the WUWM logo on the side. So it's a great way to let the world know you are a sustaining member of this radio station. And when you become a sustaining member or a member at any level, you do enable us all to hear from these remarkable people that you hear every day, whether it's our foreign policy contributor, Art Sear, or it's people like Alexandra Rosas and Lane Pierce, who we just heard from talking about motherhood a few minutes ago, whether it's Wisconsin singer-songwriter Sean Carey, who we'll hear from in just a few minutes, or any of the hundreds and hundreds of people that tell their stories on Lake Effect each and every week. each and every year. Call us now, 414-227-3210, or go online to wuwm.com/give. One last break, and then singer-songwriter, producer, percussionist, and Eau Claire, Wisconsin native Sean Carey joins us ahead of his concert this evening in Milwaukee. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Sean Carey's path to becoming an acclaimed indie singer-songwriter started very close to his native Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Carey has taken his interest in classical and jazz percussion and used it as the basis for his current music making, which he performs under the moniker S. Carey. Carey plays everything from marimba to organ to guitar on his new album called Range of Light, but he gets some help from other musicians, including fellow Eau Claire musician Justin Vernon, with whom he played as part of Vernon's Bon Iver project. Carey and his band will play at Club Garibaldi tonight in Milwaukee. He's en route back to Eau Claire to complete the tour in support of this new album. Lake Effect Bonnie North reached him by phone from the road and wondered if his degree in classical percussion from UW Eau Claire ever had him imagining a career with a symphony.
No, not at all. I mean, I guess there was always that possibility, but no, I guess at that point I thought I would just be more of a gigging musician and probably go teach private lessons and stuff, and or maybe go to grad school. I wasn't quite sure. But I definitely didn't picture myself being a touring musician and ultimately, you know, being a songwriter either. So
yeah, where did that transition happen? You know, a lot of people are gigging musicians, but making that shift is kind of a big one.
Right. Well, my last semester at college, I started to play with Bon Iver, and that was kind of getting a lot of attention. And basically, right after I graduated, we hit the road for about a year and a half. that's when it started. And then over that year and a half to 2 years. Being on the road and seeing the world and being exposed to a bunch of new music and seeing bands play, and it was just really inspiring to me, and I kind of felt this wave of creativity inside me, and I wanted to get that out, so I started working on my first record called All We Grow, and that's when S. Carey started.
Range of Light is the new album, and with the songs we're hearing today kind of weaving in and out are from that album. And when I listen to the tunes that I've heard, I'm really struck by the fact that you were a percussionist to start with, because the songs are in some way so rhythmically driven. The future. I'm thinking of Crown the Pines, particularly,
right?
Because, yeah, it's very melodic and there's a lot of interesting harmonies going on, but the way you've layered those vocals is incredibly rhythmic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think I think that the percussion part of me comes out more in my songs than maybe the drummer part of me. Some of the songs are kind of like anti-drummer, you know, like, where we don't use a full kit and we use, try to layer different textures of percussion with shakers and wooden sounds. And then we also try to use more pitch percussion like vibraphones and piano and anything like that that creates layers of percussion. And that's something that definitely I took from my classical training, whether playing in percussion ensemble at school or even just checking out more modern composers that really explore percussion, especially in the last 50 to 75 years. But yeah, I guess that's kind of one of my main springboards for writing, is kind of creating cool textures like that and using percussion as the basis to write a song on top of.
You're radiant and I'm ready for to bring a flower in. And the sun was up and the frost was gone. In that dewdrop dress of fawn, and the spots were on, but I'm calm this run.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you started with, you know, sort of a rhythmic idea first. You know, a lot of songwriters would start with a melody or maybe a lyric or something like that. Do you usually start with that idea of a rhythmic complexity and something you want to explore that way?
It depends, I guess. Yeah, I mean, with Crown the Pines, I just had that main motif right away, that the vocals and the piano and bass all are doing in unison. And That's where that song started, and but every song is kind of a little different, I feel like. And Justin Vernon actually helped because he sings on that song, and he helped kind of clarify what the vocals should be doing as far as those the layers of more of the choral, almost round sounding vocals.
Yeah,
so that was really cool.
I was thinking it was like counterpoint. You had all of these really fabulous, almost anti-rhythmic things happening all at the same time, but it all worked.
Right, yeah.
And so you're crediting him? You're not taking credit for that?
Well, I think he came up with the line that he sang, and then basically we worked on the song for quite a while, and we had all the like undercurrents, we had all that going on, and then he popped in, and we were kind of at this stopping point. And I had some lyrics laying around that I wanted to use, but I just couldn't figure out how to use them in a longer melodic way over the top of all the faster rhythms. And so yeah, Justin definitely helped me with that melody and kind of had that idea to do the more round choral thing on that song.
I am in love with this place, but I fear for its grace. Shoot, the sky opens up like the sea, and the resonance of the clouds
things that my boss and I thought of when we were listening to it is that that's what the Beach Boys would sound like now if they were recording now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a compliment. I was a huge Beach Boys fan as a kid, actually. So.
Oh, well, you can tell. You can tell that's in great. That because that is – we just looked at each other and said, are you sure that's not the Beach Boys? You know, kind of like morphed a little bit. But certainly you can hear the influence in that. And California, California plays such an important role in this album in general, not just Beach Boys. You talk about California and Arizona influences. How did that come about?
Well, my dad is from California. So his whole family, my whole side of the family is from there and still lives there. And my dad actually lives in Arizona now. But we would go out and visit every summer and spend like a month driving around those states and camping and hiking. And we went to Yosemite and went to the Grand Canyon and went to a bunch of places that are so wildly different than Wisconsin. So I just kind of have always had a love for the West and for that area specifically, and some of the songs, when I started writing them, I started to tap into those memories of visiting those places. And even more recently too, I mean, just every time we're out there on tour, I just have a lot of history there. I proposed to my wife in San Francisco, and it just makes me feel warm and
Well, it's obviously a very personal connection to it. And you named the album Range of Light, which is from a John Muir quote. And he, of course, had an affinity with California as well.
Right. Yeah, and he actually lived in Wisconsin as a kid, too. So
a double connection.
Yep.
Well, you're going to be here tonight, and then you're heading back to Eau Claire, right, at the end of the week?
Yep. Yeah, we play Minneapolis and then Eau Claire, so home stretch.
Is Eau Claire home at this point, or are you out in California?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so you're still based here.
Yeah, it's always tempting, but I love Wisconsin and plan on being here for a while, maybe forever.
Is this the first tour of the new album, or has that okay? So you know you're just finishing it. How's it been going? How have people been receiving it?
It's been going really well. Yeah, the shows have been good, and we're definitely into a rhythm as a band, and we're excited. We're going over to Europe in May, and that'll be our first time over there. So we're excited to share our music with them, and everything's going well.
Well, Sean, it has been such a pleasure talking with you, and welcome home.
Thanks.
And we look forward to seeing you on stage at Club Garibaldi.
Sounds great.
I know my heart better than you may think. It's where
Eau Claire native Sean Carey's new album is called Range of Light. We're hearing a track from it called Never Ending Fountain. Carey and his band will play this evening at Milwaukee's Club Garibaldi. He spoke with Bonnie North. Coincidentally, Bonnie North is in the studio with us right now. And Bonnie, we are dangerously close, or close in a good way, to our goal of reaching $600 during this Hour of Lake Effect, during this Spring Into Action membership drive en route, not to Eau Claire, but to $130,000, at which point the drive will end. How do people take advantage of this rare opportunity?
This rare opportunity is brought to you by 414-227-3210 or by the website wuwm.com/give. And we're hoping that you will take advantage of all of the things that are on offer, mostly the fact that you support the programming that you hear. You get to hear from musicians. musicians like Sean Carey, who I had not heard of before, you know, something came through our email and I thought, wow, this guy's really good.
Right. He does some really interesting stuff. And Lake Effect offers the chance to hear him in his own voice talking about how that music gets made in a way that's not sound bites. It's not it's not loud. It's really a chance for an organic conversation about somebody who's doing really remarkable stuff.
Exactly. And we know that you listen. We know that you really like the program. We get feedback from listeners all the time. Now is the chance for you to say, well, you know what? I am going to become a sustaining, active member of Milwaukee Public Radio. And we're hoping right now in this break that we'll get some new members, people who have been listening perhaps for a while but have not yet contributed.
We know there are thousands of people in the Milwaukee area, thousands and tens of thousands of people who listen on a daily basis or at least a weekly basis to Lake Effect and to all the other shows that are on WUWM. But when it comes to members, we have about 9,600 member households in the Milwaukee area, and that is a good number, but it really doesn't represent the entire picture. And maybe you think that that the cost is a barrier to membership. It really shouldn't be. Any amount is important to us, especially if you can become a sustaining member. Maybe it's $5 a month that you can spare to help keep this station, shows like Lake Effect, healthy day in and day out. Become a new member or renew your membership at WUWM by calling us at 414-227-3210 or go online WUWM.com/give.
And we do have a drawing for our Spring Into Action membership drive, and that includes dinner for two in Chicago. It's at the Michelin-starred Moto restaurant. It includes an indoor farm tour and a lab cooking class as well. We had this on our last drive. Very popular. People not sure who won it because I don't know, but somebody enjoyed it very much, and somebody will enjoy this one very much as well. But you got to be in it to win it, and the way you do that is you go to the website WUWM.com/give. You call 414-227-3210. Of course, you don't have to make a contribution to be entered into the drawing, but we certainly hope you will.
It's very much appreciated. All your support is appreciated, and thank you so much for listening. I'm Mitch Teich. Hope you can tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7. Listener-supported WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. It's 11 o'clock. Fresh air is next. Stay tuned.